bypass the approval of the minutes from November and go on to the OCEMS report. David?
Many of the stuff is in the on the agenda, so I'll kind of go real briefly through these. Just a reminder that we've spent the last couple of years encouraging everybody to sign up to subscribe to EMS, the bulletins. We do use that for also for notifications, and we try to get everybody on the OCGov delivery system as well, because that really is how we communicate with our stakeholders. And we do get a lot of people on there, but I know we get a lot of new people too, so just encourage people to sign up for that. We are going full bore with our ambulance inspections. We inspect over 420 plus ambulances every year, and so the group that does that is kept very busy doing that.
How many?
Well, last year we had 427 yeah. total.
They go into every single vehicle with a checklist and check everything from the, you know, how well the doors shut to do the lights work and the
radios. They look at their they look at the required documentation they're supposed to have, cleanliness and everything. So every single one is, that's permitted by our county is inspected by our team. So,
are you required to do that?
To do every single one.
As being responsible for health and safety,
we push it. Yeah.
We created a policy where we upgraded. I saw Patrick come in. When did we increase the standards for ambulance inspections? 3-4 years ago?
They were increased significantly 3-4 years ago under May.
Yeah. So because we're responsible for the transport of these EMS patients, so it behooves us to make sure that if we're putting our sticker of approval on that rig, that rig is safe.
And they have a very good relationship with the ambulance providers too. They work with them, and so they usually don't have too many problems when they go out, but when they do see them, they report them and they get taken care of right away. So they have a pretty good working relationship with everybody.
Would you be willing to share that checklist? The reason why I ask, we have a transport system within our facilities, and it'd be fascinating to.
It's online.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's all electronic.
It's all in their iPads.
They use their iPads.
But I can ask.
Can certainly
contact.
Even if they just pointed it to us, yeah,
Mang's
that'd be great.
Mang's the coordinator for that program,
and so I'll put him in.
He can certainly.
We have a family of rigs ourselves, mm-hmm. So thank you.
Sure. We still don't have a quorum, do you?
No.
Okay. Let's see. I'm trying to go through because I know a lot of this stuff is on our agenda. Healthcare Coalition. This is in 2016, through the HPP grant, the Healthcare Coalition formed a network of healthcare providers throughout the county, hospitals, skilled nursing facilities, long-term care, surgery centers, clinics, etc. And it's basically to bring together as many stakeholders as possible from the different systems out there to respond to public health and medical emergencies and disasters. That's coordinated through our health emergency management division, and we have a couple of chairs that are in the committee today right now, but they meet they each meet separately, and then they meet as a full committee. Do you know when the next EMS meeting is?
March 11th.
Is it March 11th?
I think it's a Tuesday.
It's Wednesday.
The 23rd?
Is the hospital.
Yeah.
It's in March.
Okay.
The hospital one meets monthly.
Right, so the hospital group is the one probably more pertinent for this group, and that's a monthly meeting.
March 24.
Okay. Okay, there you go.
Bunch of overachievers.
And membership is growing, and we've had some really good turnout and some really good discussions. They have had presentations that have been presented to groups, and there's been a lot of positive feedback coming from that. So we have that information on our website as well. Encourage you to, if you're interested or if you have someone in your group that's interested, that's a great way to stay informed. So that's the Healthcare Coalition Network. Final implementation for the paramedic policies and standing orders that went into effect October 1st. Implementation date is April 1st for all training to be done, but we've already started looking at some the new policies for revisions and updates for this next rotation. So more information to come on that. The naloxone program that we were following, that Vicki was following, we have released that to the law enforcement, so we're no longer doing the individual tracking that we had been doing. So that is, I guess, no longer a project. It's now part of their...
Well, I still look at every single case, but we're no longer requiring reports and feedback. If there are over 400 cases, and there has not been a single safety issue, not one. The policy, the procedure, the standing order followed 100% of the time, so super safe. I mean, if people on the street can have Narcan in their pockets and start putting it up people's noses on the street, I think our law enforcement folks can do it well.
And just the one last thing, our Transpo meeting is next Wednesday, the 22nd, right?
And education and training is Thursday.
And education and training as well.
Thursday.
Is on Thursday. Thank you.
Yes.
That's it for the report. The rest of it will be in the agenda.
Are you doing the rest of the report?
Epidemiology, Dr. Farrell.
Sure.
I believe they have something in the...
Yes.
Okay, let's go to attachment 3.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did have one more.
Okay.
That was attachment 2. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I didn't see. Eileen had reminded me this morning, but I didn't write it down. So attachment 2, as part of the EMS report, is a letter that went out to the EMS provider agencies and base hospitals on the effective January 1st. Orange County EMS no longer will accept checks in our office. So the information you have in your packet gives the information on how that process will be done. So our office will no longer be accepting any paper checks.
David, if we... I have a question. Did you send this to, I know I got it and I forwarded it to my director of ED, but did you forward it or send an email to administration?
It's,
or just to like
David didn't send it, it came out from Laurent.
Okay.
It went to all EMS provider agencies and base hospitals. So who it went to, I don't know.
Okay.
So we'll just Venmo the fees?
Yeah, I'll give that account separate offline.
Within our online licensure program, it's incredibly easy. You do your application, put in your credit card, boom, done. You don't have to wait 6 weeks for hospital to cut a check or 4 weeks or email or whatever.
Okay, that's it.
We have a quorum, so let's go back to the approval of the minutes of November 12th. So if you could take a quick peek at that, and then I'd like to entertain a motion for approval.
I like your.
Yes.
Is there a second?
I wasn't here, so I can't.
Oh, second. You weren't here.
Yeah. Janet tells me they're accurate. If she's willing to sign an affidavit, I can second it.
Right, I need a second. That's it. Okay, thank you.
Reluctant hand.
Does everybody know who can and cannot vote? That may be a problem. I don't know, but it's on the minutes. Okay, we have an approval and a second. Any opposed to the minutes of November 12th? Thank you. So let's go on to the EPI report.
Pretty briefly, so the county put out a notice last week regarding Zika virus. It's no longer really an issue in the county, or mostly in the country at this time. So routine testing is no longer recommended. We are seeing an uptick in dengue fever. And they describe it here. I won't go through the details of dengue fever, but that has been increasing, so just keep an eye out for that. Get rid of any standing water as well. As far as influenza, we're in full swing in influenza season. The cases were going up exponentially, but last week, according to the CDC, it kind of ticked down a little bit, so maybe it's not going to be as horrible of a flu season as they thought it might be. We did have our first death due to the flu in someone under 65 years old, someone from Tustin, and that was due to influenza B. That's the more prominent strain at this time. That tends to affect children more. So, as usual, we recommend strongly that people get vaccinated. Every year we say, oh, the vaccine is not working as well as we hoped, but it does work some, and it does help prevent complications. So, it is a very useful.
Questions?
Your next attachment is our 2019 diversion report. And so it pretty much follows the previous reports as far as how it's laid out for you. There's one addition that was put in there, and that's on page 7 of the report. And it was kind of an overview for 2019. Some comments that reasons primarily that were given that relate to volume, acuity, and staffing issues, primarily for smaller facilities, but it was also cited by the larger facilities as well. Patient mix was sometimes put in there, mentioning holding admitted monitored patients, psych patients, that was almost universal in the facilities. Also ED beds full, ED lobby full, triage area, long wait times in triage. OR cath lab was mentioned as well for reason for diversion. Then comments that were in there, and I put the comments in there really just to kind of illustrate some of the strategies and techniques that facilities were using to assess their level of overcrowding in the emergency room. One of the popular ones is the CDOC, which is based on the NEDOC, Emergency Department Overcrowding and Scoring System. So you can see there's a variety of factors that facilities are looking at And this comes up when we bring up APOD and when we talk about wait times and delays and offloading patients. And I know sometimes the ambulance companies and the fire agencies, they get there and they're trying to deliver their patients safely, transfer care, and then get back in the field because they know that they need to be out there. Sometimes they think, well, the ER is just not moving the patients fast enough. And so there might be some, you know, education that might be needed for people that don't work in the hospital, that it's not, it's never really been an ER issue alone. It's a facility issue. And it's gotten to the point where to make improvements in that, you really have to make concerted efforts by the whole facility, and sometimes even drastic changes. And you can see when you look at the overall diversion times that there isn't any one factor that seems to impact it. You might have a facility that has a large volume of runs, EMS runs, with low diversion time. And then you see some with large runs with high diversion time. And so there really is a lot of different factors that go into what impacts that. We have some facilities that really did make an effort. Fountain Valley's here, it's one. You can see there's, for the year of 2019, there's several facilities that had lower diversion time, and some of them really had to make some significant changes. Los Al's another one that had to, they actually closed two service lines, their geropsych and their OB. They closed them and converted those beds. And that also helped them in lowering their diversion time in the ER. So that's just, I just thought it would be of interest to see just what facilities have to go through in trying to control their diversion times. That being said, as far as we're, Orange County does compared to the rest of the state, we still have pretty good times. So even though when you're working here and living here and you're a patient here, it doesn't seem like it, we really do seem to have a better control over our diversion times than a lot of other places. So that's the purpose for leaving these in. The overall observations, when we looked at ED diversion time, we had a small subset of facilities that accounted for 75% of the overall ED diversion. Looking at CT downtime, six facilities accounted for 100% of the CT downtime for December. And they tend to be those smaller facilities and probably have equipment that needs frequent maintenance. And so sometimes they'll go down, their CTs are down for an extended period of time. And then we also include our trauma center diversion downtimes, and that continues to remain below that 2% threshold, even with some of the busier times that we have. So that's just to kind of give you an idea of what reasons that are given that are stated by the facilities. And some of the trends that we look at as well.
Discussion.
Any comments on this?
I mean, overall, I think it all looks much better than it has. So I think everybody's attention to it should be noted. Your work should be noted too for making it, for demanding that it happens.
Thank you, David.
The HEAR ReadyNet. Yes, so the next report in your packet is the HEAR ReadyNet. So this report we started doing a little over a year ago, and our HEAR Radio is our backup system for emergency communications. Our ReadyNet, of course, is our primary component for emergency communications. And so I started including this in our reports just so the facilities could see how we do as a county. The first one is the offline hours. So sometimes when we're looking at the ReadyNet and we see that a facility has been offline, we don't jump on it right away, but if I come in on Monday morning and I see that someone's been offline since Friday, it's like, okay, somebody's probably not aware. And so there are a couple of times when I call the facilities directly and say, hey, can you check your ReadyNet? It looks like you're offline. And so we really want to encourage the facilities to work with their staff that they are checking at least once a shift when they come on, and when they leave, that you know, the your ReadyNet is actually online, because it is used every day. It's used not only for monitoring the system, but when there's MCIs and they're querying the facilities to find out, you know, what patients can go where and who can accept them. That's a critical aspect of the ERC's function, is to be a communicate what their status is and to respond to those types of queries in the system. And that's really the rest of the report talks about the different either the ReadyNet or the HEAR radio response rates. So you can see that we did have a couple of facilities that towards the end of the year had issues with their HEAR radio. That's on page 3 of that report. So I did indicate that there were a couple of the facilities that had their HEAR radio out for service, so that obviously would impact their response rate too.
You want to go on for
APOD. Okay. The attachment 6 in your packet is the ambulance patient offload time report, or APOT time for the year. It's a month, you can see month by month. If you go to the last page of that attachment, you can see December's report that has the 2019 totals on the left and the December monthly totals on the right. For the whole year, our total aggregate time for Orange County EMS, and this is the 90% of the time patients were offloaded in 26 minutes, 51 seconds overall for the year. Now that's overall. When you start looking at individual areas, you can probably find that there are certain facilities that have a higher average than that. And so those usually, again, just like diversion, you have to look at the individual facilities to see what are the factors that are a challenge for them in meeting that average that we have for our system. We try to list some of the things like the number of transports that each facility gets and the diversion hours that each facility reports on as well.
So let's see.
Okay. Discussion on diversion or the APOD times? Okay, well, thank you, David. We have unfinished business. The next item is the trauma consultation report. Attachment 7.
So as the committee knows, the American College of Surgeons came out in July and examined our entire trauma system and gave us the results of that assessment in October. We analyzed it and put out our interpretation in our November. Basically, the analysis that the ACS came up with is that generally we do a very good job with our trauma system. Excellent patient care, excellent coverage, we have great response times and transport times, and the system with our current trauma center structure is working as is. We concurred with that assessment. They did identify quite a few opportunities, however, focused in broad categories of collaboration, better analytics, leadership, and outreach. So those are kind of the four themes that the college focused on in terms of some of the opportunities we have to make our system more mature and frankly improve the system. So they recommended, as far as collaboration goes, they recommended increased collaboration of our agency, EMS, within the healthcare agency with various other parts of the healthcare agency to develop kind of population models and increase identification of needs within our communities. In addition to that, the collaboration, and I think the biggest part of the collaboration focused on how we as a trauma system can collaborate with other stakeholders, not just the trauma centers themselves, but other stakeholders within the system, EMS, law enforcement, and particularly non-trauma centers, and how we can work together to create a collaborative system. I keep saying collaborative because that was the big theme that they talked about, to improve the overall trauma care within the county. To that end, they discussed ideas of increased involvement in committees of stakeholders into the trauma committees, as well as trauma centers in other committees as well. And so we're kind of working on how that structure will look, whether or not we need to either add meetings or bring in stakeholders into the current meetings we have, and maybe have trauma report in some of these meetings, for example, this meeting in particular, to better involve the various people, or the various units within the county. As far as analyzing data and leadership, again, the leadership aspect not only comes from our agency, and they recommended that we add a trauma coordinator and a trauma data analyst dedicated full-time. That's easier said than done, given our county budget and more and more limits that are placed on it. But it's something that we're hoping to look into, and hoping to convince someone that to help fund that. We talked about perhaps funding that through hospital fees as well to kind of bypass the limits, the constraints that the county has put on us. If we can kind of get that done, we can help with the leadership structure within the county and this board. And then as far as other outreach goes, of course, other stakeholders, injury prevention. I know CHOC is involved a lot with that. Other outreach topics, education at non-trauma centers. Did I miss anything, David?
No. It's, you have in your packet the EMS our assessment of the ACS report and what they identified as our high priority recommendations, and those are the ones that Dr. Graywall discussed. And so now at this point, we really are trying to move forward with strategizing how we can implement, based on what resources we have right now, how we can implement many of those high priority recommendations. We will be sending out a notice that we're a request at EMCC that public comments be, they were part of ACS's assessment They did receive all the public comments that we got. The ACS report is their report, so they actually, we had their the PRQ document, which is the pre-review questionnaire that those trauma center people know the work that goes into that. That was submitted, and that was also posted on our website, so you can see what that included. And then any public comments that we received, including letters, were also submitted to ACS prior to their visit. And that's what we'll be posting. And we'll send a notice out with a link so you can see who sent what, basically. And then as far as any other information, our letter that was sent out in November with the final report, that was also sent out through our EMS distribution list. So we'll continue to post and share whatever information we have related to this.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Braywell and Dave. Is there discussion?
Quick question, what's your process and timeline relative to those recommendations, including the priority recommendations, and is EMS or the agency considering a budget request relative to those positions for the upcoming budgets? Did you move across that process?
Yes, we're considering a budget request. The timeline is going to depend on the resources that we can have available. Some of the organizational things, when we meet next with the trauma committee, for example, we can discuss a lot of those things. A lot of these things, because of the collaboration piece, require time to kind of interact with the various stakeholders in order to kind of form a plan that's amenable to everyone. And then, of course, the positions within EMS, that's a more difficult piece, and that's going to be somewhat of a requirement, but obviously we'll have to work around it if we're not able to get that sooner than later. So I don't have an exact timeline for you, unfortunately, but we do take these recommendations seriously, and hopefully we can get something this year.
The timeline will be dependent on things outside our control, but all this information has been vetted and gone through our internal systems as well. So this information also went out to the county agency as well.
Further discussion?
Yeah, I'm so thankful to hear the decision to publish and make available the public comments. I think it'll be fascinating. I have no idea how many people responded. I'm assuming it's in high hundreds, if not thousands, of comments. So
not
I think that'll.
Not quite that many.
Pardon?
Not quite that many through the public comment portal, but.
Any gut on that? Is it a couple hundred? A thousand?
No, it's not that many.
Because I asked 280 to do it, so I would assume. Just kidding. I would assume there'd be some
probably should have asked more.
Yeah.
Because we all know the survey responses are a lot less than what we asked for.
But, sure.
So it wasn't just through the comments that will be posted would be the ones we receive through our public portal.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those included letters as
sure.
well. Any attachments also will be in there as well. Other comments or information came through the committees. We attend most of the meetings that are out there that are put on by fire, by base hospital, by individual hospitals, the REACs, these committees. That information was shared with all of those groups and solicited feedback from them as well. The public portal one was not only for formal comments and letters, but also for the general public too, which don't necessarily have the opportunity to come to these kind of meetings, even though they're many of them are open. So what you'll see will be what was submitted to us.
Look forward to seeing that. And then some other observations. I think some pre-hospital input to the process would have been of great benefit.
And there is some of that in there too.
Perfect. Yeah. And then I would also like to have us consider, you know, when the work done, to understand it better, appreciate what it means to get a patient from, you know, point A to point B, given a burden of traffic that I'm not so sure was really made known and clear in that report. And we made that known in our concerns that was surfaced at the EMCC last week, Friday. And then my hope is, you know, I think language is really, really important, and language shapes and forms ways of thinking and ways to form opinion. I like the word collaborative that you're using, Dr. Gray. Well, I'd encourage also the language of inclusivity. You know, how do we make this an inclusive process going forward, especially the trauma committee? When I look at the input from the American College, I think it'd be great to have some of the non-trauma receiving centers, you know, that take a large burden of ambulance transports, part of that equation, especially when you think of mass casualty and something bad happening to our community. I remember Dr. Sam Stratton sharing with me about 2 years ago that we're pretty high on the list of concerns by Homeland Security, given all that's in Orange County, from Disneyland and Anaheim Stadium and other large venues, the big surf competition in Huntington Beach. So we're ripe for something bad to happen. And having a collaboratively inclusive network of providers to be able to shoulder and stand side by side in one of those bad events would be ideal and I think beneficial to this community. So I'm hopeful some of that language can find its way into the discussion and the way about we do this work.
Further thoughts? We have three policies.
I just wanted to briefly mention, just to kind of close the loop on these policies, 650, 630, and 680, we mentioned last time that we had to change some elements of the policies due to state regulations, and put them out for public comment, and that is now complete, and these policies are now implemented. So I just kind of wanted to
okay, new business, trauma collaboration. Is that what we just talked about?
No, this is related, but no, it's separate.
I can provide an update.
Yeah.
So our trauma centers, CHOG, Commission, UCI, and OC Global continue to meet. We have the last few years to build our trauma center collaborative, and much like you've talked about, Ken, is to be inclusive. So looking forward, we're looking to the county for guidance on how you'd like us to include the ERCs and follow direction with our trauma ops committee and so forth. Some of the projects we're working on with our TPM committee is our trauma registry inclusion exclusion criteria to make sure that we're capturing all appropriate trauma patients in the county the best we can with our registry, so that we can run as much data and look at our injury prevention from our standpoint. The Pediatric Trauma Collaborative and Pediatric Collaborative is meeting today, as well as the TPM Collaborative. Two of our goals for this year are working on non-accidental trauma, so identification, reporting, and screening for these patients. And the goal is to provide this information to the pre-hospital providers as well as the ERCs, because we know that kids are very portable. They don't always show up at a trauma center. So really identifying best practice and then getting that education together for all of the providers in the county. The other goal of ours with the Pediatric Collaborative is reducing pediatric imaging exposure. So all of our facilities have come up with our own guidelines. We're going to vet those and come out with recommendations from the trauma centers for pediatric imaging, and then we'll distribute those to the ERCs in the county. So those are our two goals for this year. We're open to recommendations, and then also looking for participation and how that would look with stakeholders. And I will say that there's been representatives from the county at all of our collaborative meetings, so we're looking to be inclusive moving forward.
Yeah, and I'd like to comment on that because you know, the term collaborative, just to be in full disclosure, was collaborative between the trauma centers. That's how it started off as. It was, and per, you know, one of the things that came out of the college was this idea, you know, when was sort of the feedback, some of which I think, Ken, that you're sort of expressing right now, which is, I mean, the history of this place is trauma is a difficult thing, let's just put it on the trauma centers, and so it was our perception and trauma that it was ours to manage. And it's great to see an interest across other centers and other communities that they're interested in all this, and that, so I think the theme at the last meeting was that, to expand that, not just so that the trauma centers are finally sharing data and communicating, but that then we let other people and other stakeholders know, in particular the non-trauma centers. So I think it actually, I mean, there's some things that, you know, people hear about a problem here or there. I don't think people are aware of the profoundly good outcomes we have at a NAP compared to the national level of our trauma outcomes. Our survival is in the best percentiles of the top decile. I mean, we're literally in the top 2 or 3% of outcomes in terms of survival, et cetera. And that we should get that out, and then we can hear the concerns back and maybe sort of focus our attentions, not just to what we think is important, but what the community thinks is important. And we can get some pride around what we're doing and sort of more participation. I do agree, I mean, like when we talk about stakeholders, I mean, I think the stakeholders are like people in this room with knowledge. We can, you know, I do have concerns about, I mean, we've all been on a, you know, we've all been on a news outlet which then has a comment section, and you think the crazy stuff that comes in the comment sections, that can't really, that can be thought about, but it can't really guide the, you know, it takes people at the executive level of all these centers to really interpret that and funnel it through. I think a lot of people, if they were really educated in all of it, like if somebody has a concern about transport times, as much as that, or in disaster management, they also have to be educated on how you make disaster management work or how outcomes can be affected, and it isn't all about transport times. So I think this collaborative, really, the idea that we really need to open it up and be more public, so we do need a better venue to communicate it. I mean, look, we had a hard, until I walked in, it looks like we didn't even have a quorum here. I'm not exactly sure how this collaborative, without money, without an EMS trauma program manager, et cetera, how we're actually going to execute getting this work. The preventive work being done at CHOC, UCI, and all the trauma centers and all, and how that can then tie into, because if you really want to be preventative, it has to involve the non-trauma centers, right? How are we going to do that without an investment, without, you know, and is it a priority to get it on a budget, and would it be effective? So we're now looking at this differently. Instead of feeling like it's our job to do it, we're now realizing that other people want to hear about it, and we need to include them. I don't quite know that we have determined what that forum will be, and I don't know if you have it, but Trauma Advisory Committee is still going to ultimately be 4 trauma centers, 5 trauma centers that show up and talk to each other. Whether we can really get people to show up to that and spread the word and give us input, I don't know, and I think we should open that up to, you know. I don't know if you have a thought as to how to effectively do this. My plan was to go and look at how Trauma Advisory works at LA County, to see if, I was just at the regional trauma meeting, which was up in Santa Barbara this last weekend. Actually, it was on Friday during the EMCC meeting, so I was up there. We're talking about how all the EMS systems from San Luis Obispo down to Orange County can somehow collaborate on disaster management and such. I think LA County might have a more effective advisory process than we do, and so I'm going to go and try to see if I can grab ideas. If you're interested in going there, or if you're interested in going there, maybe we can see if we can borrow something together and bring it down and try to expand this process a little bit.
Yeah, there are a lot of ideas out there. We talked about, I don't know if you want to chime in, but we talked about different ways we could do that. We said, well, should we add people to trauma ops, and then, you know, the pro is you get increased participation, but then the con is then you dilute the key things that trauma ops does. And do you want to do that, or make the meeting 3 hours, or that kind of thing?
Yes.
The other thought was to have trauma come into these meetings, and have specific presentations about data and, you know, prevention and all these different things, and, you know, kind of take the lead on a section of the meeting to, you know, to deal with the trauma aspect of things. I know LA County does a, for example, in disaster, does a disaster resource center, and trauma centers are kind of the hub, and then the spokes are the other hospitals, and they kind of take the lead and really this doesn't even have to be trauma centers necessarily, that's kind of the start because the resources are greater, but then, you know, have kind of that a spoke and hub thing like we do with stroke centers and cardiac centers. So those are some of the ideas out there. It's implementing them, it's getting enthusiastic participation. And I think enthusiastic participation is going to kind of be the key thing, you know, putting aside the what we can do in EMS and trying to hire someone, because that's a process in and of itself, just to write a job description, this, that, and the other. You know, we can at least start with, you know, how can we, with what we have right now, start that process, and maybe if someone else wants to kind of introduce ideas on how to, you know, how to do that.
Is there an annual forum, like a public health forum, that the Orange County Healthcare Agency runs or manages, a fair, health fair, an event where stakeholders show up to? Even annually, that we could maybe have a bigger trauma presence and like people that are interested could, I don't even know. I mean, I'm imagining a booth at a convention, but I, you know what I mean? Like, does that venue even exist for Orange County healthcare overall that we aren't participating in? Does that exist or not really? I mean, we have these meetings, but I'm wondering, is there ever an annual thing that everybody gets together?
There are annual events that some other divisions do. I don't know if we, as the EMS,
did they do something at Miles Square Park a few months ago?
But
yeah, the healthcare agency, you know,
the healthcare agency does
a lot of things. But as far as trying to bring every single program into it, I'm not aware that there's something like that. You know, it might be a social services focus or a mental health focus or a substance abuse focus.
So I think, Vicki, like, there's a lot of great work being done at the healthcare agency, but some of it's so hard to pull out, and there's silos, I think, within the ERC's trauma system, the healthcare agency in general. So even just having a planning meeting with all of those, you know, coalitions and really see what everyone's working on, because mental health is a trauma issue, and injury prevention is very much the focus of the trauma system. So instead of creating redundancy, how can we share what we're working on and build a bigger network more effective?
Personally, I you know, having been around the system for so long, I think having that facilities is a great start. And the thought just left my brain. I need to retire. You're right that there are a lot of different silos, and it's when you're working with a government entity that is so big, it's hard to pull everything together, and I think that's kind of where we're trying to come up with ideas on how to network and mesh everybody together without adding another meeting or, you know, because we're all kind of meeting burned out. We were talking the other day that the agendas, it's like we hear, you know, we've heard the APOC diversion reports how many times this month, and it's not even the middle of January.
This week.
Four in the last week.
Four times.
Just in a week,
but
yes.
But trying to keep it fresh and, you know, so that's why I really like having you guys here, and then the Healthcare Coalition with the EMS section, that's meshing trauma and ERCs and disaster management. So we're seeing some baby steps.
Even picking two goals for the healthcare agency for the year to work on and really hardwire those things, you know, so that we can see progress and movement and then what is effective for us to network together and what just doesn't fit.
But it's also
my other thought was one of their recommendations was that we have epidemiologists within the healthcare agency, not at EMS, but for us to better integrate with epidemiology, not necessarily disease management, but if trauma is a disease, looking at trauma and, you know, getting more GIS analytics so that we can see what's happening where. So I think that's one of the things we're working on as well.
Absolutely. Well, I think it also goes to the participation aspect, and you talked about that. Some of the meetings that, you know, people don't, you know, it's the same people that show up, and no one else talks, and there's a few people that talk, and, you know, and you don't get appropriate participation, when you don't get people speaking up and discussing, and even if you want arguing, then you're not going to get any progress. And I, you know, I think if you can, you know, the idea of these meetings, the idea that you have EMS interacting with facilities is fantastic. Now, how many facilities are here right now? You know, I see the same base hospital coordinators at every meeting, and that's wonderful. But should there be other people as well from the facilities here? And same thing with CPAC, County Paramedic Advisory Committee. What's the participation there? And so, you know, as you know, just like the old John Kennedy speech, you know, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. You need to participate, and you need to be active and vocal. Otherwise, it's not going to work. Otherwise, it's going to be another meeting that there's a lot of stakeholders invited to this meeting, and there's limited participation, and it's just stagnant. So, that's funny.
Further discussion. Let's go on to Specialty Center updates.
In response to some of the new regulations that came out last year, which resulted in us having to revise our Specialty Center policy, criteria policies, we felt that putting this as a standing agenda item in facilities would kind of help us remind us that we need to bring up on a regular basis some of the requirements for the specialty centers, or just issues or feedback from anyone with specialty center status. The big focus from the changes that were made are primarily data and QI. And it has always been a requirement for designation as a specialty center that you submit data and that you submit your QI plans. But there's been a variance in the type of data that we get and what we can do with it. Either data that's has not been submitted or data that has not been validated very well, are just, and not just on the facility side, but on our side as well. And a lot of that has to do with the amount of time and resources, since I'm the only facilities coordinator for EMS for the 26 facilities and multiple trauma centers and stroke centers and CVR centers and CCRC. it's a challenge, and so, the big change last year was that these were put into state regs. And so our plan is to work with the facilities undergoing redesignation. I'd mentioned it at the ED leadership meeting on Friday that it may be a challenge for some of the facilities to meet all the requirements. We probably will be giving conditional designations for those that aren't able to demonstrate compliance with the criteria, but we'll work with you. We have five facilities that are, I'm waiting to get all the information back to start on their redesignation. Some of them are CVRC, some of them are ERC. The regulations state that when you come up for redesignation, you will be evaluated under these are current criteria now. Our policies were vetted through our process and through public comments and feedback, and we incorporated what we could since many of the changes were based on state regs. But we know that having the criteria and then actually implementing it can vary from facility to facility. And so we we will work with the individual facilities in making sure that we're all compliant with the criteria. And I am in frequent discussion with many of the coordinators at each of these facilities, but I'll be bringing that information to this committee as they come up. We still are trying to determine how we're going to set up the PI portion of the requirements, and Dr. Graywall kind of touched on that, and how we're trying to look at, do we need to set up new committees to address that, or can we use the existing structure that we have for committees, or is it going to be kind of a hybrid, a mix of that? So that's what the status is. But this will be a standing agenda item, and we'll provide updates at each of the meetings.
Isn't it more computerized now, so it's easier for both the facilities and for you to about to kind of get through the data and do your deep dives?
Yes and no. So the stroke registry is computerized using our existing system, the OC Med system, but there are challenges with that as well. And the STEMI or the CBRC data is still paper form. We're working on getting that. We've actually met with Riverside County. They are using the same system that we use, the Image Trend, and they have their STEMI centers and stroke centers submitting their data through that. So we're looking at what they're doing. They don't have their trauma registry on there, and we do. That's actually the one that's been on there the longest. So they're looking for us for some guidance. We're looking at them. We're actually also looking at meeting with them on a regular basis as well to help deal with the electronic issues and collecting data and putting it into our registry. So we've got a lot of big goals this year, and that's one of the big ones.
Any discussion on this? Our goal also has to be to kind of limit the time that these tasks take, because boy, you know, you can, if you're just pushing papers all day long, it's difficult for you and for the facilities. Okay, other business? Okay, our next meeting is March 10th. Is there anyone opposed to adjournment? Thank you for coming.
Okay.
Going down. Welcome to 2020.